Today is July 28th, 2005. I'm at the Steinbeck Center. My name is Christine Navarro. I am interviewing Mr. Fred DeYoung. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Just fine, thanks.
Tell me a little bit about where you grew up, please.
I grew up in Salinas as a youngster, a very poor family. And my movement into the Bracero program happened when my dad was sure that he wanted to teach me the value of a good college education. So rather than being a bag boy at a grocery store, he wanted me to work in the fields, which I did.
Your dad's name, please.
Fred DeYoung.
Okay. Now tell me what that experience was like and at what age you started.
It was between sophomore and junior year. I worked a summer with a company called Christensen Brothers. And I got the job by going down to the unemployment agency, and they placed me into the fields.
What was that like for you going?
Well, it was unique. I'd never been to a bureaucratic type of organization, so it was inhibiting. Got the job, went out my first day in the fields. I didn't know what to do. It took me 2 hours riding my bicycle in the dark to get to the labor camp, and then we started at 6 o'clock, hopped on a labor bus, went out and finished that day close to 9 o'clock at night. So that was my first day in the fields.
Were you exhausted?
Yeah, actually I couldn't ride my bicycle home. My mom had to come pick me up. I couldn't physically move. So I went home, I was asleep in the car, asleep before she could even get any food in me because we had no dinner that night. We had a lunch, but no dinner, lunch in the fields. So that was how I got going.
Tell me your first day on the job, the initial reaction. I mean,
Well, it was interesting. I had 1 year of high school Spanish. So I had very limited ability to be able to speak to the guys. I learned pretty quickly. In a week or two, I learned a whole new form of slang Spanish, and I just call it gutter Spanish, where they get a kick out of teaching young Americans, how to swear. So that was a big thing. We got a big kick out of it. They loved that, and they loved it when we swore.
Now, so, did you know what you were saying, or was it?
Of course.
Okay.
We figured that out very quickly. So it was. I still have that Spanish in my head. So.
Now I understand there's a story about what you wore the first day.
Oh yeah, first day I didn't know what to wear. We ended up wearing like flannel shirts if it was cool in the mornings. But I had a absolutely canary yellow sweatshirt, hooded sweatshirt. So the guys were great. They kind of were like little brothers after a while. If they liked you, the crew liked you. Our crew was 32, and we were a harvesting crew of lettuce. And if they liked you, they came up with nicknames. And so they called me the Amarillo, the yellow, for my yellow sweatshirt, which was kind of crazy, but that's what it was.
Now, did it stick with you for the rest of the
duration? For the whole summer, they called me Amarillo. I didn't know if it was because of my sweatshirt or what, but that's what they called me.
How did you find out?
Well, they said it openly, so I asked the, we had a big foreman, his name was Mola, he was huge. I mean, I was 6'4", he was bigger than me, and he kind of told me that, hey, the guys like it because they gave you a nickname, so it stuck. So whenever they wanted me, they didn't say, hey, Fred, or hey, boy, or Chacho, it was Amarillo, ven aquí, so come here.
Tell me a little bit about the language. Was that a barrier? Was it
not? Yeah. High school Spanish here locally was Castilian Spanish. It was very formal Spanish. And I had 1 year in, which means I really didn't know much. Irregular verbs, a few regular verbs, not a whole lot. And so it was like a crash course. I'd never been exposed to Spanish outside of a classroom Spanish. And Mexican Spanish is really different, way different. The verbs are different. So, I learned that, went on to take some more Spanish, lived in Mexico later. When I was about 20, I lived in Mexico for about a year. And so, because I had such a positive experience working with the Braceros, that I go, well, I really like them culturally. So I went down and lived in Mexico for a year and had a ball down there. So the language was a real barrier for me to start with, but it was no time at all when I was learning, pick up, the words I need to, to use to work in the crews.
Tell me a little bit about your daily routine out in the fields.
Get up at 4 in the morning, eat a breakfast, get on my bicycle, strap a flashlight on it because I'd be pedaling to work in the dark. I get to the labor camp maybe about 5:45. It took me almost 2 hours to pedal to the camp. It was a long ways away from where I lived. get to the camp, check in, get on the labor bus with the crew. We'd go out, and it was, we'd wait to see if we're harvesting that day, which we all like to do, because we're on a piece rate. And so we had a very fast, very hard-working crew. And so we'd make more money. But some days we'd go out and hoe and thin, or basically chop weeds, or move, cut new-growing lettuce out so that the other lettuce would have room to grow. So that was probably the most miserable job that I thought.
Why?
We all worked with a short-handled hose. I still have my hoe.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's great. Pretty worn out, but I still have it. And that was really, really hard work. It was what they call stoop labor. And being 6'4" with long legs, it was hard enough for everybody else, even when you're in shape for it. But it was very, very difficult for me. So it took 2 or 3 weeks before I, could hoe and thin and stand up and be able to straighten up.
Can you explain what hoe and thin is for someone?
Sure. Lettuce is a row crop. So you walk down between two rows, and you'd work two rows of lettuce. When they seed the lettuce, put the seeds in, they all grow right next to each other. But lettuce has to have a room to grow. It needs about 1 foot for the leaf structure. So you'd have to take out little teeny plants, and you'd take out weeds. So basically, sometimes we would hoe or thin. Thin lettuce is thinning it, as I described. Hoeing would be taking weeds out. So it depends on where the crop was along the way. That's what they did with us when there wasn't crops to harvest. And we got paid minimum wage when we did that, which is, I think in those days, somewhere around $1, maybe $1.25 an hour. But when we were working crews, you could make $2, $3, $4 an hour.
And how could you do that?
Well, it depends on what you did on the crew. If you were a cutter, different people got different rates.
Could you describe each position?
Yeah. I started out as a cutter, which is you had a knife and you cut the lettuce. Take a couple pieces of leaves off, and you'd set it in rows. And then the next person that would come up would be the clamper and the stitcher. Well, there'd be somebody in the middle that would be called a spreader. And what they would do is take 11 to 13 boxes at a time off the truck. They were being stitched on the truck, thrown down to the spreader. The spreader would then take the boxes, spread them over the 16 rows of on both sides of the trucks. And the spreader, and then the harvester, and they'd be dropping that behind the cut heads of lettuce. Then there'd be a guy with a water pack, and he would spray the milk off the lettuce. It was when you cut it with a knife, it would milk up. And then those would be loaded into a box. It was like a little teeny baby wheelbarrow with a box on it, and they'd wheel it. One guy would load it, another guy would come in, clamp the box, and another guy would stitch the box shut. And then they throw it on the ground, and then they have the wind rowers, which is what I end up doing, which you have to take it from all those rows down to two rows alongside the truck. And then you have the loaders, which I end up doing too because I was a big kid. And we would throw anywhere from 25 to 60-pound boxes up to the loaders on the truck. And they were the highest paid. The loaders were the highest paid. And the lowest paid were the spreaders and the cutters.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit about, and you worked from dawn to dusk then?
Pretty much if the market was good, we'd work from dawn till after dark. Because they had a couple lights in the trucks, but not much. But we'd work a little after dark, long days, really long days. We'd break for lunch, and we'd eat in the fields. They'd bring hot food out, which was part of the program. They'd deduct a little bit of money from your salary. And the food was fabulous.
Really? Tell me about the food, because we've heard different stories about the food.
Well, the company I worked with was a small company called Christian's. I think they only had 2 or 3 harvesting crews. And maybe I was really fortunate, but I never met anybody else that of my era, my group, that ever worked in the field. So I couldn't compare notes with how the other companies were. But we were treated well, and the men were treated well in the labor camps. I mean, they had nice bedding, nice clean facilities, and good food. But the food would be typically some sort of stew, in which you'd take about a half a loaf of white bread, and you'd dip it in the stew, and they had soda pops. And knee-high orange was, and naranja was the most popular one. But we'd have sodas. Some of them were strawberry sodas, and they all called them sodas. That was the American word for soda pops, I guess, sodas. And they'd have sodas. We'd eat bread, and we'd dip it into the stew. Sometimes we'd have tortillas instead of bread, but it was a lot of bread. And we had very, very hearty lunches. Never had dinners. If we worked through the dinner hour, we just kept working. So there was no break for dinners.
Was that your choice or the choice?
No, it was a choice of the farmers. That was probably the only thing I would say, that they should have done something different about that. But then, you know, it didn't happen every day. Only when the market was really high did we work really late. If it was a good market, in other words, the price was high, we'd just keep cutting until we dropped.
Now, at night, I believe that it'd be a little bit more dangerous to work in the fields and the...
Not too bad.
Not too bad?
Nah. Yeah, you know, particularly if the moon was out. But we didn't work past 9:30 or 10. That was it. I mean, that's a long, long day.
And you did this how many days a week?
Sometimes seven, but usually five or six. Because it was a small farming organization, sometimes we'd cut other people's fields to keep us busy. But mostly it was our own fields, so the hoeing and thinning, you'd go home at 5 o'clock. But when we were harvesting, that's when we made the good money. And that's what everybody wanted, was to make more money. And being a piece rate crew, we worked really hard. The guys I worked with were really hard workers, mostly family men. I heard somebody say that they thought most of the braceros were single. But in my crew, the bulk of them were family men and older, maybe 30 to 50. Where I think I was 16 and a half or 17 then. And so they were older, almost like uncles. And they were good folks.
Tell me a little bit about the men that you worked with, about the crew.
The crews are, because they're family, hardworking. Every once in a while, you know, you get somebody that's not so hardworking, and they'd use peer pressure. And that person wouldn't last. I don't know where they end up, whether he went home, but he wouldn't stay on a crew. We had a really fast crew, and they wouldn't put up with slow labor, so they peer pressured them out. And then the foreman, that person just wouldn't show up the next day. I don't know where they went. Maybe they went back to Mexico. And once we had one bad fellow that was, he thought it was a lot of fun. When you're going through the labor bus, you have to go between two rows of seats. And these aren't seats, they're like long benches. And he would goose you, and which was really bad. And he thought it was really funny. But anyway, the fellows end up taking care of him in the labor camp, and he never did it again. So the next day he showed up, and his face was bruised. So it looked like they'd taken care of that issue, because they were very protective of their crew.
How long did you work in this? How many summers did you work?
Two summers.
Two summers.
Yeah. And I started out cutting, and then I was a spreader, and then I was a clamper. As I became bigger physically, when I first started, I probably weighed 140 pounds, dripping wet, 6'1", 6'2". Then I went to 6'4", and probably weighed about 235. I was a football player, basketball player. I was big and strong. So I moved over to windrowing and loading, because I was just big, which was the most physically demanding, but also you got paid the most. And it was the prestige job on the crew, besides the stitcher. The stitcher was the number one besides the foreman. And that was usually one person, and they made the boxes. And that was the nicest job because it was not physically demanding and yet got the highest rate of pay.
Now, you said your father had wanted you to make for this experience. Did it work?
Yeah. I have to say this, I've done a lot of different jobs, and a lot of them were a lot easier. I lifeguarded. I worked at grocery stores as checkers and bag boys going through school, through college. I've never seen anything or worked as hard as I did when I worked in the fields. I mean, when I came home, I was just dead tired. I remember the first day I came home, that my face was just dark with dirt because I was cutting, and when you don't know what you're doing, so a lot of times you'll pull the plant up and the dust blows in your face, and it was just terrible, terribly hard work. Stoop labor was really hard. Hoeing thinning, I think, was the worst for me. I didn't mind picking up boxes and moving boxes, heavy boxes. Physically, I could handle that. The other hard thing was is walking between the rows because of the rays. So you had to watch your feet, but you got used to it. It's kind of like maybe a seaman gets used to swinging a boat, get used to walking in irregular ground.
Did they help you? Did they help teach you? Did the other crew members help teach you how to do these certain jobs?
Yeah, they did. I remember when I was struggling for each job, like clamping and stitching. I did all the jobs, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I was fumbling, and I was poor. As a cutter, I was terrible. You know, I just couldn't get it. So after 2 weeks, they said, "Okay, enough of the cutting. He's not going to get it." So I moved up to some better jobs, but They were great. The foremen weren't particularly nice. They were rough. They swore a lot, but the crews protected. There were four local high school kids on our crew, and all of us came on about the same time. I was the youngest of the group, and all of them worked two or three summers, and all of us came from very poor families. All of us had to work to help contribute. Our moms generally worked in the carrot sheds, packing carrots. Our dads had jobs, but not high-paid jobs, but regular work. So we all had to help out. So and then the crews all protected us in a lot of ways and taught us and nurtured us. And it was that's why I was excited to talk about this, because it was a very positive experience for me.
And how do you think the experience was on the men themselves, the traveling, and how that affected them without their families?
It was hard for me to get to tell you everything because of my limited Spanish. Second year, I had 2 years of Spanish in, but I still hadn't lived in Mexico. And my Spanish was 2 years of high school Spanish, plus learning how to swear like crazy and in slang Spanish. But the feeling I had is the family men, they'd always show me pictures of their kids if they had pictures. They're very proud of their families, strong, culturally very strong family men. Almost all of them went to Mass on Sundays. They're churchgoers, hardworking guys, really dark skin from working in the sun so much. They had different types of hats. Where we wore cowboy hats, type of Western hats, they had different types of straw hats that they came up with. But they still were really dark. Their hands were dark. A lot of us wore long sleeve shirts. But good family people. It was my impression. It was a great family unit, great humor in the culture.
Really? Tell me about that.
They laugh. They have a good time. They like to tease. And we're always the brunt of it because we were the kids. So we always took the teasing. And then we got to where we would tease back and have a ball with that. And it was just great fun. And the other three guys I worked with, we worked together for 2 years. So.
Do you remember their names by chance?
Yeah, one was, his name was Sanchez. The other name was Lucas. He was the quarterback of our football team. And he was a loader too. So it was really good. It was like being in the weight room. My son's at university now and he plays football. And they have to go to the weight room. For us, working the fields was our weight room. And I don't remember the fourth fellow. I just can't remember him. He was kind of quiet, but the other three of us were pretty rambunctious. We had a good time.
And now, after you worked in the field, did you all stay together in high school?
Until we graduated, and then one of them ended up having a difficult time and ended up getting shot by the police. Had a tough time with drugs. The other fella, I don't know where he ended up, but he ended up as a laborer somewhere in construction. And the other fella, I just don't know.
And yourself?
I'm the only one that probably went on to college and ended up becoming a business person. And having benefited from my experience in the fields, I guess, learning what I wanted in life.
Can you tell me, can we go back to the conditions of the barracks and can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the labor camp, the clap-sided buildings made of wood with a center court with mostly dirt, but some gardens. And the fellows would play soccer. They get a soccer ball, a football, and they would play soccer. It would be one of the things. You didn't see basketball hoops like we would have as kids, but theirs was soccer. That was what they enjoyed. And inside their barracks, of course, there's no air conditioning. The air conditioning was windows, but it wasn't really warm. Bunk beds and kind of beds I had when I was in the Army, just bunk beds. Looked like Army surplus bunk beds. And they had tables where they could sit around and talk, play cards, write letters. A lot of them were letter writers. Most of them were letter writers, and they'd get letters from home. And in those days, they'd send their money. I'm almost sure it was Western Union. They would wire the money home, but they were here to make money, send the money back to their families or to their mothers if they were single.
How did they cash their checks?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Or acquire the money orders? Did someone do that for them? Or?
There were places. They go to Western Union. I know that because they said that to me. They go to Western Union, And then they would buy, I guess they would give them the cash, and then they would wire the money to their parents for a very small fee. Because they said that was the best, because there were places that were ripping off the workers and charging exorbitant rates to move money. But they talked about Western Union as being a good deal.
Now, did they kind of know those places that were ripping them off and they would become...
I don't know how they knew, because we didn't have a lot of exposure to other labor camps. But maybe it was the experienced fellows that had been there for some time would let the new fellows know what the ins and the outs. Where to go to theaters, where to go to restaurants when they went into town. Because they'd walk into town. We were 4 miles, 5 miles out of town.
Oh, okay.
And they'd walk into town. One fellow had a bicycle. It was pretty beat up, but he'd ride in. But everybody else pretty much just walked into town.
Tell me a little bit about the theater. You said that they knew which theater to go to. Did some allow them? Or?
Well, there was a theater that showed Spanish-speaking movies, so they would go there. They found that, and they found the good Mexican restaurants right away. That's how we always knew if it was a good Mexican restaurant. If you walked in, everybody's speaking Spanish, we knew the food was great there.
Do you remember the name of the theater by chance?
Yeah, it was this Cinderella. I think it was out in the Alisal, which is East Salinas. Where in those days it was pretty much the Dust Bowl Okies from Salinas. They'd moved out of the fields into the packing sheds, and then the Braceros moved into the fields. And what we're doing is field packing in those days rather than packing in the sheds. So we're field packing, and then they would take it to the trains from there and the trucks.
Now, field packing, can you describe that a little bit, please?
Field packing is basically there was no machinery. There was a stitching truck that would make the boxes. That would go fall right behind the cutters, and then there would be load trucks that we would load to throw. We'd pack the boxes in the field. And we would never leave the field except for to use the porta potties, and that was it. No running water, but we had water like igloos and stuff for water, but no running water to wash your hands type of thing. But we'd eat in the fields, so we never left the fields. All day we're in the fields, one pass after another. We'd make a pass 16 rows wide till we'd done with that field, and then we'd transit to another field. But we would physically pack all the boxes in the field. And then we'd load them on the truck. The trucks would take them away either to the train depot or to long-haul trucking companies.
Can you tell me, did you ever see or encounter or talk to government inspectors or Mexican officials that came in to inspect the area?
Never Mexican officials, ever. I always knew when the bosses were coming, either the bosses of Christensen Brother Farms or the ag inspectors would come in. And the ag inspectors, you could just feel the tension in the crew when they'd come around. Because even though we're all there, they were there legally, it made them nervous when bureaucrats would come around. Because what the ag inspectors would do, would look at the lettuce, tear it out, to check the they'd grade the lettuce heads, A, B, C, D, I think, some or 1, 2, 3, 4. And the better quality heads, we would get a piece of the profit or piece of the action. So if they undergraded the quality of the lettuce, we wouldn't be paid enough. We'd be get the short end of the stick on a deal like that. So every time the inspectors came in, and I think they worked for the government, might have been the federal government, I'm not sure. But it made everybody very nervous because we were worried about them grading our lettuce incorrectly so that we wouldn't be paid enough.
And did that ever happen? Or
only once. And what happened is one of the owners, one of the Christians, came back to explain to the in front of the our foreman. And the foreman explained it to all of us. That they had misgraded the lettuce, and that we would be paid the difference. So,
and were you, to your knowledge?
Yeah.
Pay the difference.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit?
We got a supplemental check the next week.
Okay.
We got paid weekly.
And tell me a little bit about the owners of the farm themselves.
Well, we didn't see them very often.
You didn't?
No. Because it was a small farm, I think they did their own selling, their own buying of boxes and all that, so they didn't come out a lot to the fields. We'd see them once in a while drive pickup trucks, but we didn't see them often. Mostly our contact was our crew boss, whoever that was. I had two crew bosses in two summers. One was a short Filipino fellow that was meaner than the Dickens. He was a junkyard dog. He was really mean.
Do you remember his name?
No, and probably because I don't want to. He was really tough. He threatened everybody every day that he was going to fire me, you know, in his Filipino accent. But our other boss, Moley, the big guy, he was a big, heavyset guy. He was fair, and the guys liked him. But our crew really didn't care for the Filipino boss.
Was he ever physical with any of the...
No. I didn't see any of that. He was just mean-spirited and yelling and screaming all the time.
Now, did the second year, did the same crew, most of the members come back? Were they able to come back?
There were people the second year that were on my crew the first year, but because they worked together well. But what they generally do is second-year crews, they try to balance second-year crews out with new people so that the teams or the crews would all be pretty, they'd have somebody to show them the ropes. So not all of them were back on our crew, but there was a lot of returnees. I believe that the fellows came up, felt like that they were making good money, and that was a good thing for their families.
Do you think it was fair, the program, the Bracero program?
I don't know. Politically, I don't know. My microcosm was just that one labor camp that I rode my bicycle out to every day. The guys were happy. They weren't complaining about the. Because later when I went to college, I heard that there were farmers that took advantage of the Braceros. I heard this and that. And my whole experience was that the Christensens took good care of their crews, took good care of both our pay, because we were paid pretty well. And I didn't hear any grumbling. Food was good. Beds were good. There were clean barracks. I didn't hear any of that because you would hear about it. The guys I talk with, the Braceros, you know, they talk about going in town and drinking and getting borracho and drunk and all that. And they talked openly. So if there was problems, I would have heard of it.
Can you tell me a little bit about what they did on the weekends that you know of?
Generally Sundays was their day, although sometimes Sundays would work. A good portion would go to Mass on Sunday mornings, and then they go shopping. And they buy shirts and stuff, and sometimes they would send American goods home. But they would stroll the lower end of Main Street was one of their favorite areas, and because there was a lot of shops down there that they catered to the Bracero programs. It was good business for them, good for the Braceros to go there. Buy socks, boots, because we mostly wore blue jeans, everybody out there, with work boots, work socks. Sometimes flannel shirts, sometimes denim shirts, but light shirts or and then sweatshirts was predominantly, or vests. A lot of the guys had vests that they wore. And everybody wore hats, straw hats. It wasn't baseball cap time yet. It was before the baseball caps, but it was all straw hats.
Now, when you say some of the items that the stores, do you believe that it helped the local economy when they went in to purchase all these goods?
Well, certainly. I certainly believe that. I don't know how many Braceros were in the area, but there had be thousands in the Salinas market. And they go to movies, they go to the restaurants. I mean, they would try not to spend. I think most of them sent most of their money home. Some of them maybe didn't. Maybe the single guys would spend their money. But they spent money locally. And I'm certain that was helpful for the economy.
Now, do you know if they were charged for rental for like the bedding or none of that?
I just don't. Food? I know that they deducted. I think we paid 35 cents for lunch. They deducted every day. And that was a heck of a deal. And they talked about that was the cost of putting the lunch out. I don't know how they put it out for 35 cents, but they did. So sodas were like a dime type of thing. So
they would bring the lunches to you out in the field and you would just rest?
Yeah, in these stainless containers. We'd eat out of stainless, like army trays with sections in them, and we'd have stainless silverware. And we'd just squat and sit in the fields. And we'd eat right in the fields. A lot of us ate lettuce. Lettuce was great to eat. Tasty. Hearts of lettuce were always great. But after a while, that gets a little old. But the food was fabulous in the fields. I mean, my mom used to pack me a sack lunch, which I'd put in my little pack, and I'd pedal my bike out. But after about the fourth day, I said, you know, I want to eat with the guys. And the food was really good.
Tell me a little bit about the bike ride, and I mean, that was 2 hours back, 2 hours to and 2 hours from.
Yeah, it was pretty rough to start with. And the other thing is, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I didn't have a light on my bike, so I had to strap a flashlight to it. And if the batteries went dead, you had to be careful, because a lot of people going to work in the fields in the morning, or going to work in the mornings, you have to be careful of the cars. But it was just part of the deal, to get to work, to make money, to help the family. And it's not like we had the money for gas to be able to drive me to work. We only had one car in our family, and it was a beater. So it was bicycles for me.
Can you tell me about your impression of the Bracetto program overall?
I wish I knew more about the microcosm I was in, because that was really a pleasurable thing for me. I enjoy the guys. I enjoy their company. I enjoy the way we interacted. I can't speak about the Bracero program outside of that little, my small experience in that area. But what I can speak for is the happiness and the humor. They always, our crew was always happy. And I've worked in a lot of places over the years, had a number of different businesses, and it's really easy to read people if they're not happy, or if they are happy. And this was just a happy environment. So our crews, I think it was a really good program. They sent money home. They came back. They enjoyed it. It gave them some, I guess, ability to be able to live better from where they came from. Having lived in Mexico, I see where they lived and where they lived up here. People will say, well, gee, they lived in labor camps, and they were in cots and things and bunk beds. But a lot of the fellows that I later, 2-3 years later, saw in the fields, I watched crop dusters come spray right over them. That never happened when I was in the fields. Here, I saw farmers pulling plows, burros. I saw, when I lived in Mexico, I saw terrible conditions. Candles, kerosene lanterns, no electricity, baths and done in canals with pesticides in them, children and taking baths and pesticides. So truly the conditions here wasn't five-star hotels, but my comparison after 3 years later living in Mexico was, I can see why a lot of them were happy with their conditions. It was certainly a step up.
Can you tell me a little bit about the spraying? You said that was not done while you all were in the fields.
Never happened with the crop dusters when I was in the fields. Never. Never heard of it happening. But when I was down in Culiacan, living down in some of the agricultural areas, it was a common practice for them to have people in the fields when they're spraying.
Can you tell me a little bit about, do you ever hear any stories about the experiences of the processing of these gentlemen from Mexico to the U.S.?
They never talked about it.
Really?
Yeah, they never spoke to me about it. I think they just, I don't know if it was a bad experience, good experience. I think it was just experience that they figured they just got to get through to get here.
Do you think most of them remained in the U.S., the people that worked on their crew?
I think there's a higher percentage than people think. It was interesting today. I was watching this Smithsonian group do a little program, and there's probably 10 or 15 Braceros there that live here that were in the Bracero program. And so I suspect that there was a couple, 2 or 3 generations. They were the first generation of their families, and then their families came to join them in some manner, some sort of program.
Did you ever get the sense that, and for the men themselves, their family missing them was just very hard?
Oh, it was terrible. That was the part, even though they took such pride in showing their pictures and talking about their niñas and niños and their wives, their esposas, and they talked about that and how they miss their wives and children so much. That had to be really rough. And the harvest season here was, I'm going to say, I only worked 2.5 months because I was going to high school. But I really think the harvest season is more like April, May, June, July, August, September, maybe October. So they were here for 6-7 months. And to be away from family, I know when I was in the military, when I got drafted in the Army and I went away, it was tough being away. And I didn't have children. It was just my mom and dad and my brothers and sisters. So I suspect that was probably the most difficult of all the things. The conditions, at least in my environment when I was there, were good. Livable conditions. I think the condition of being away from the family had to be really tough.
Do you think that could be one of the reasons why they took you under their wing? And
yeah, I was like their cousins, I guess, their small cousins. Yeah, it was, maybe that was it. Maybe, you know, I never really thought about that, but when I think about it, of course. You know, we were the only younger people they're getting exposed to. You know, and we liked them and they liked us, and that was the neat thing. So
it was a good relationship for both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we got the bulk of the deal because our experience, all four of us really liked our guides, our crews. They were like uncles to us. And once in a while, we go to work somebody else's field, and maybe there'd be other crews. And the other crews didn't have local high school kids on the crews. And so they would start picking on us or throwing dirt claws at us or something along or obscene gestures, and our crew would step in and protect us every time. It was kind of neat. We're like a family.
Sounds
so I still get, you know, feel good things when I think about it. It makes me feel good. So
that's great. Yeah. Are there any other final reflections that you have?
Well, I sure would like to see some sort of uncovering of this history while we still have the Braceros alive. They're getting older. I saw the fellows today. I was a youngster when they were Braceros. These guys were 30, 40 years old when I was 15, 16, 17. And I'm almost 60 now, so I say we better get the history down. I'd like to see it translate in some way into California history books as, you know, at least, you know, half a page or something. So people will know about what the culture and the Mexican heritage here. As California becomes more blended between a variety of different ethnic cultures, I'd like to see more and more of the history of the Mexican culture play into the schools. And so I'm hoping maybe something like this will help play into that.
What did you think of the overall presentation? Anything that needs to be added, that needs to be missing? It seems.
Yeah, I think we're just scratching the surface right now in terms of the young people who are doing the research and so forth. But I think as you maybe get a half dozen Braceros in today, they talk to their buddies, and if follow-up is what I'm concerned about. Getting back to Salinas a second or third time, because the word will spread. It'll spread from my side of it, which is the business side or the ag. I'm not an ag business person, but I know lots of people in the ag. In fact, I've already talked to people about being open to the youngsters here that are coming for interviews and to talk to them and not feel threatened by them.
Tell me about that, because, you know, agriculture played a huge role, and
yeah.
and it's, you know, positive and negative as in everything. But do you think they would be willing to talk to?
They are. We've already made contact already with the president of the grower shippers and explained that this should be viewed as a positive thing. And those people that didn't treat their Braceros right, they should be worried. Those that treated them well should be proud and should stand forward and be proud of what they did with their crews. And those people that didn't treat them well, maybe they ought to be exposed. But when I explained it to him in those terms, he goes, great. Yeah, because, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what some of the Braceros said that worked for maybe some of the different companies. Mine, I felt like if you ever asked anybody that worked in it, they probably would have thought highly of the crews. But other companies perhaps weren't as good to their crews. And so those people will probably run and hide. But people will probably talk about it. But the other ones, I'm encouraging them to come out, and I believe they will. From what I understand, we're starting to set up interviews with them so that when they come in, that the interviews come in without bias. They come in not looking or having a written story in their own minds and looking for validation rather than coming in to listen to both sides of the story and then formulate. So I believe that's what's going to happen. So I'm hoping that the crews will come back two or three times and you'll see more of a groundswell of information. And then more information, better quality information translates to, into the books, the history books, and maybe the curricula in California.
Do you think if we do come back that more agriculture people will be able will enable us to interview them?
If their experience was a fair experience in the interview processes, I think you'll see them lining up.
Do you think they would prefer to see questions before, or do you think... How do we get them to the table? That guess should be my question.
Well, people like myself can help in that regard.
Okay.
Where I know the owners of all the companies. I grew up with most of them. These are their fathers would have been the owners or at least the foreman or the bosses then, back in the late 50s, early 60s, and perhaps some of them their grandfathers. And I think if you talk to them, a lot of people thought that the Bracero program was a good program for both sides of it, both good for the fellows coming from Mexico, mm-hmm. and good for them. Even the ones that are out there that perhaps weren't as good at treating their people well, looked at the Bracero program as at least good for them. And shame on them if they weren't good for the Braceros. So I think you'll find that as you start to interview people, you'll get a feel for that. And maybe there weren't problems out there. I'm just guessing, perhaps, that there were. Not being exposed to it.
Any final reflections that you have?
Oh, I have very fond feelings. I hated working in the fields. I mean, it was honest work, but I've never, ever. I mean, I worked on crews, the forestry crews, making trails, hiking trails. That work was a piece of cake compared to working in the fields and on the harvesting crews. It was hard work. So I have a high regard for those that did it. And high regard for the culture of the men I worked with, the family culture, the religious culture, the love for the children, and just the good people that they were. So that's kind of my overview of it, and that's why I'm here to talk about it. You can bring that up is from a different perspective.
The hard work, what do you think you learned from?
Well, I'm sure my dad thought that I wasn't applying myself well enough in high school at the time, which of course he was right. So I came back, started studying harder. I was in athletics and started studying harder and went on to university and came out. And I think what he really was showing me is my family were laborers in a lot of ways. My mom certainly was. And my dad, although he had a white collar job, he didn't make very much money. And so breaking the mold of being laborers into maybe there's something better. I want my children to do better than I did, was my family. And I think it was pretty much, I don't care what culture you come from. That's every parent's dream is to hope their kids do better. And that was what my dad was pushing me. He wouldn't allow me to work in a grocery store. He wanted me to work in the fields so I could learn what hard labor means. And I think, you know, now I look back, he never told me this, but I think what he wanted me to do was also to understand there are other cultures out there that are different than ours, and to learn from that.
Did you?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
now, how do you pass this lesson on to your children?
Well, I don't know. That's a great question. I suspect by communicating. I look at my children now as being pampered. Be second generation, people of means. But I'm sure my daughter's got it because she's been to Mexico 3 times on a mission program with our church and Jamaica once doing mission work with Spanish-speaking families. She and I have talked long and hard about it. My son doesn't seem to get a grip on it. He's a little bit like I was before my dad put me in the fields. You know, he just doesn't see it. He hasn't been exposed. My daughter certainly has. She's 17, just turned 18 last week, so she's got it.
Wow. At a very young age.
Yeah. So.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hopefully you put that on.